Okay, let me just clue you in.
Here's the first page.
Actually, the first page should say Reish Chaf Ches on it. No? Of the four sides, the first, yes. The earliest of the four sides. Does that make sense?
No.
No, you don't have Reish Chaf Ches? Oh, okay, good. So let me try to fill you in. Rav Soloveitchik has a bombastic chiddush about Hechsher Kelim LePesach. And his chiddush is based on a comparative analysis of the Rambam in Hilchos Macholos Asuras, when he talks about Bliyas Isur in the Keli, in the walls of the Keli, and the Rambam in Hilchos Chometz Umatzah. And there are a number of discrepancies in the Rambam. For example, I'll just give one example of many. The Rambam in Hilchos Chometz Umatzah adds what's called Shtifa Bitzonen. That let's say you have a chametz dika kli that during the course of the year absorbed a tam of chametz in it. It's not enough to do what's called marika b'chamin, otherwise known as hagola, but in addition you need to rinse it off with cold water. I mentioned the other day that for 13 years I used to kasha bases as part of my miluim. I wish that was the only day of miluim, but I got. Some years I used to get 45 days of miluim, but one day of miluim was always built into my calendar. That was erev Pesach, when we slept to who knows where. So very often I got the easy job. I got the job of shtifa bitzonen. You know, I would hold on to the hose and hose down the big, you know, kederos that were after they were subject to hagola. I would do. Anyway, the Rambam codifies this requirement in Hilchos Chometz Umatzah. In Hilchos Macholos Asuras, when he talks about Hechsher Kelim, let's say you have a kli that was Bolea Tam, Nevela, or Trefa, Dab, whatever it was, the Rambam just speaks about Hagola. And he doesn't mention a word about Shtifa Bitsone. That's one example of many examples that we discussed over the course of the last few days. In the discrepancy between Chometz Umatzah and Shar Kelim, Shar Isurim. And basically what the Rav does is, he comes up with a fantastical structure in which the Rabbanon established that for Kelim, for Pesach, we need Dumyo, it has to be a subject to the same kind of a Hechsher that applies to Kodshim. There's a parsha in the Torah which is called Parshas Tzav, in which the Torah speaks about Kodshim. And the Torah says that if, let's say, you take a kli and you cook in it chatos, it's not enough to take the kli and subject it to shtifa, if you want to use that kli for chulin, because the kli has a bli of chatos in it, and after a certain period of time, that bli of chatos becomes what?
No sir.
But rather you need Marika and Shtifa. The Torah says, Umorak v'shotaf b'mayim. And that means Shtifa b'tzonen. Now that's true for Kodshim, because the Torah has a special requirement of mitzvahs Kodshim. And for example, that halacha of Shtifa b'tzonen requires Kodesh, requires Azora. It has to be done within the bounds of the Azora. What does that have to do with our discussion about the Rambam in Hilchos Chometz Umatzah? So here's the Rav's breakthrough, that in Hilchos Chometz Umatzah, it's not enough that you remove the blia, which certainly you can take out the blia of chametz in most cases. We're going to talk about kli cheres later, by simply doing marika, which means hagola. That's not enough. You have to go a step further, and the Rabbanan required you to do in kelim for chametz for Pesach what the Torah requires in the case of chatas. And what is the Torah require in terms of Hechsher Kelim if it was used for Kodshim? It's not enough to do what? Hagol, you also need Vishata Famayim. You need Shtifa Famayim. So, for example, the last thing that we discussed, just filling in those who weren't with me, is in the paragraph that starts the Ode Kasav HaRambam. And here the Rav has a kind of a little unofficial battle here with the Magen Avraham, because the Rav is going to claim that the Magen Avraham is reinterpreting the Rambam, but it's not the simple pshat in the Rambam. The Rambam tells us that if you have a kli chametz that was used as a kli sheni, like for example karos and kosos, so in other words, it's not something that you use for bishul on top of the fire, you use it for drinking purposes or dishes for eating and so forth. The Rambam says that you need to be machshir these kelim. No saying el tok kli gadol, no selemayim roschim. Okay, the Rambam comes up with something called irui kli rishon, which the Rambam says is sufficient because of the principle of kibolo kach polto, that these kelim only were bolei chametz only be irui kli rishon. So therefore, irui kli rishon is enough. So the Magen Avraham asks the obvious question: we never found the halacha of hagola be kli rishon, of irui kli rishon. Either it requires Haggolah or it doesn't require Haggolah. But what such thing as Iri Kli Rishon? For example, in Macholos HaSuris, the Rambam never mentions that you have to take Karos and Kosos that you used for drinking Nevela or eating your dishes that you ate Nevela Trefa from, and you have to use Iri Kli Rishon. The answer is because Kli Sheni is not Mavashel. That's the way the Halacha of Bliya works, that a Kli Sheni doesn't have the propensity of being bolea tam, and therefore doesn't need heksha. Why does the Rambam in Ilchus Chametz U'Matzah require a process of heksher for a keli that was used for only kli sheni, which is not bolea? So the Magen Avraham wants to say that the Rambam is talking about a case of kelim that sometimes they were used in a kli sheni, but maybe sometimes there was iri kli rishon, and therefore iri kli rishon if it's mevashel, and therefore you need hechsher. So the Rav has a barrage of questions on the Magen Avraham, but the most important question is, where does the Rambam say that he's talking about karos of a kosos that were used by iri kli rishon? The Rambam says explicitly shenishtamish bem chametz the kli sheni. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say anything about kli rishon.
Right.
So that's another case, as we said before, where there's a discrepancy between the Rambam in Chametz U'Matzah and the Rambam in Heksha Kalim as far as Macholos Asuras is concerned. Because Macholos Asuras lo hizkir a Rambam, the Rambam in a very blatant way omits that a kli shenishtamish bo b'kli sheni needs any sort of Heksha whatsoever. And the answer is again that the Rabbanon raised the bar and had a whole different standard and demands for Heksher Kli Chametz for Pesach. That a Kli Chametz for Pesach, even though technically there's no Bli of Chametz there. Again, as odd as that sounds, but if you look at dishes and glassware and cups and silverware that were never used in Bishul, okay, in the case of a spoon, maybe on occasion, he had the Chametz that was cooking in a pot and he stirred the pot with a spoon. Okay, but it's hard to say that he did that with a fork or with a knife. Okay, maybe you'll say so, but certainly karos and kosos are only used for klisheni, and in Hilchas Macholos Asuras, klisheni is not polea, and if it's not polea, it doesn't require heksher. But the answer is there's a whole new standard over here. Now, what is this new standard? As we've said the following, that you see that the Rambam's requirements of heksher kelim in Pesach are on a higher standard, more demanding than they are in Macholos Asuras. But what's the Geder Adova? So the Rav suggests that we derive this from the case of Kodshim. What happens, for example, if you take a Kli Cheres and you cook Chatos in the Kli Cheres? So the Rambam says that in such a case, we have to take the Kli and we have to destroy it. Yishaver, and this is based again on a pasuk in Chumash. The Torah says vishavar, right? So the Rav says, why? Why not just take the kli cheres and subject it to hagola? Now you'll tell me, well, hagola is meaningless in a kli cheres, right? Because haTorah eidah kli cheres and yotzim neidof yoliolam. So the Rav says that's wrong. That's not true, because the Rambam says that if you took the kli cheres and you cooked shlamim in the kli feres, where the Torah doesn't say v'shiver that you have to destroy it, then all you need, says the Rambam, is morak u'shutof b'mayim. You can take a kli feres that was used for cooking shlamim, and now it's after the zman achila, so now we have a problem of nosa. And the Rambam says all you need is morak u'shutof. Again, the Rambam has certain conditions which we won't go into right now. You see one thing clearly, that even in the case of a kli cheres, it's meaningful to subject the kli to hagola. And although you won't remove all of the blia, but you remove enough of the blia to make it into what the Rav calls a tam kolush. You know, we can talk about different levels and gradations of tam. And in the case of shlamim, the Torah says once you make it into a tam kolush, that's called hetera bola, then you're allowed to use the kli. So all you need in the case of a kli cheres is to do umarak v'shutof b'mayim. So the Rav asks, why then in the case of a chatos, does the Torah say it's not enough to take the kli cheres that you cooked chatos in it, but you and just be magil it, which we call umarak v'shutof b'mayim, but in addition you have to break the kli. So Rav Soloveitchik explains the following, that even though by doing marika on the kli chatos you'll reduce the tam of chatos in the kli from a tam gomor to a tam kolush, but nevertheless there still is a tam kolush. And if there's a tam kolush, then it still has a shame kli kodshim. It has a shame kli chatos. And the Torah says with regard to kli chatos, the law divides into two. If it's a kli that's made of mateches, or it's made of eitz, then umarak v'shutof b'mayim. You need marika to get rid of the tam, and v'shataf in order to remove the shame kli, kli chatos. But if it's made of cheres, then the Torah says you can never get rid of the shame kli chatos in the cheres. Why? Because there's always a vestige, a tam kolish of tam in it.
And why is it not the same shlamim vestige?
But in the case of shlamim, right, the Torah just requires that you remove the shame shlamim from the kli by doing a morak v'shuta. It's only in the case of chatos, the Torah says that there's something called a shame kli chatos, which generates a requirement of shvira in the case of a kli chatos.
But why is the tam different left over?
The Torah says that in the case of chatos, you can never remove the shame kli chatos in the case of a kli cheres. And therefore, you shomer. But in the case of a kli that was used for what? For shlamim, the Torah says you can remove the shame kli chata, the shame kli shlamim, by doing marak v'shuta. Now we're going to take kli chametz and we're going to measure up to the standard of shlamim, not to the standard of chatos. We're going to require both umarak v'shutaf, and then the v'shutaf is going to complete the process by which we undermine and we negate the shame kli chametz. So what the Rabbanan did was, they said that a kli chametz, since it's used and designated for use for chametz the whole year round, it has a shame to it. And we have to undermine that shame. How do we undermine that shame? It's not enough to do hagola. We also need what? Marika and shtifa b'mayim tzodinim. And not only that, if the kli was used during the course of the year with some miktsas blia, which means a kli sheni, that kli sheni is enough to generate a shame kli chametz. And therefore the Rambam requires removing the shame kli chametz through this process of iri kli rishon.
So then what's the reason why the Rav says then we should be able to do hagala and shtifa with kli cheres for chametz, because we're comparing it to shlamim, not chatos?
Correct.
But we don't.
And that's it. According to the Rav, what happens is that in the case of kli cheres, the Gemara says kli cheres yishaver. Why? Because what the Gemara does is it says the following, that although in kli chametz, even if it's a kli cheres, you can reduce the tam through hagola to a tam kolush, but you can't be mafkir the shame kli chametz, and therefore yishaver. Do you follow? So even though in shlamim the Torah says that you can remove the shame kli shlamim, the shame kli kodshim, through morak v'shotaf, even if it's a kli cheres, but in the case of chametz, what the Rabbanan are saying is that the ongoing persistence of the tam kolush of chametz in the kli cheres gives the status of the kli that of what? Of a shame chametz, a kli chametz. You can never get rid of that shame kli chametz. Why? Because you can never remove the blia entirely. Now we're up to the paragraph in Nira, if anybody's following inside, on Reish Chaf Ches. He says the following. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Chametz U'Matzah, V'achar, after he finishes the Agola, Shotef Osan Bitzonen, right, he rinses it down with cold water, and then the Rambam adds, U'mishtamesh Bahem V'Matzah. And then the Rambam repeats himself. He talks about Sakinim, Martiach, etc., etc., Bekli Rishon, V'achach Mishtamesh Bahem V'Matzah. Third time, the Rambam, when he speaks about all of Hechsher Kelim for Pesach, he says, U'mishtamesh Bahem V'Matzah. Why does the Rambam feel compelled to add those words, U'mishtamesh Bahem V'Matzah? The Rambam just could have told you what the laws and the requirements of Hagolah are and to Hechsher, and then we understand that you're allowed to use it for Matzah. And the answer is, Mishem Sherotz al Hadgish, the Rambam wants to emphasize what, Yosef?
Shame Chametz.
Correct, to remove the Shame Chametz, and now you're allowed to use it.
Now it's a Shame Pesach.
Correct, because the Heksher Kalim is not just to take the Bli of Chametz out of the Kli, because in that case, then for sure there's nothing left, and therefore I can use it with Matzah. But the Rambam wants to tell you that there's something special that goes on over here, that as a result of this entire process, not only have you achieved Bliya, but you've also undermined and neutralized the Shem Chametz, and therefore Mutal Ishtamish Ben B'Matzah. Now he quotes in Avudraham. He says, in most years, Shabbos HaGadol coincides with Parshas Tzav. Now, why is Parshas Tzav related to Pesach? In other words, we're not assuming, says the Avudraham, that it's coincidental, that there's an overlap of Parshas Tzav with Shabbos HaGadol. Hainu taima, mishum de Parshas Tzav, nichlalu, dine, mariku, shtifa, v'kodshim. V'dine hagolas keli klim l'chametz lePesach, right? Yalfina midine mariku shtifa kodshim. What in the world does the Avudraham have in mind? Where in Parshas Tzav do we have any mention of Pesach? There's no even remez of Pesach. Ikar makor l'dine heksha kelim b'chumen umi geulei nachrim b'parshas matos. You remember we defeated the enemies and we took the booty from the Mijonim, and then we had, the Torah says that you have to put it into Agola, kol shayom b'mayim, tovi b'esh, kol shayom b'esh. So it would have been more sensible if Parshas Matos, which falls out, I think, in this almost in the summertime, right? Shavuos time. Well, that would be coincide with Parshas Shabbos Hagadol. But why Parshas Tzav? And the Avudraham has no problem with that, because we're going to derive the laws of Hechsher Kelim of Pesach from Kodshim. Amai Kosev Avudraham the Dini Agolas Chometz BePesach Klei Chometz BePesach Alfidim Mimariku Shtif BeKodshim. I mean, that sounds pretty odd. The Omnu Mavadai Mariku Shtifa Bekodshim Damiel Agolas Kli Chametz Achlechore Ainza Iker Mokor Agolas Kli Chametz. You talk about Agola on a Kli Chametz, you talk about Parshas Matas, not Parshas Tzav. Avlefid Vareinu Nicha. Here we're going on to the next page. He says, Hodit Tzorach Agola Bekli Chametz Ainza Gakede Lahafli Tam Chametz Abalua Behem. So the process of Hechsher Kelim of Chametz is not just, it doesn't exhaust itself only in removing what? The tam and the balua of chametz el af kedei lafkia lesalik me'alem hashem chametz, to remove the shem chametz from the kli ulatira v'tashvish, as we said before, umutar lishtamish behem b'matzah. He says, what's the source for such a thing that we have to remove the shem kli? And he says, Sofer Rambam, that the source for this is kodshim, because in kodshim there's not only a requirement of marika, there's also a requirement of Shtifa. And not only that, in Kli Cheres, in the case of Chatos, at least the Torah says you have to break the Kli. Why is that? Because it has a specific shame. It's so verab that it's Shtifa B'Tzonein Afle Kli Chometz, and that's something that so to speak, we derive, I mean, that's not the right precise language, but we derive from Mariku Shtifa Bikach. We don't really derive it because this whole requirement is the Rabbanon, but it's patterned after the Doraisa of Kachim in Parshas Tzah. Okay, Rabbi, that's as far as the general discussion that we had about the unique and high standards of Hechsher Kelim LePesach. Now on page Reish Chaf Tes, we're going back to Yoredeya Simon Tzadi Beis, and we're talking about the possibility of taking a Kli Cheres that has a Blia of Isur and being matured with Libun. Again, we have to go into details about what level or what category of Libun we're talking about, but let's call it Libun Chamur. You know, the real McCoy Libun that you and I have never seen with our eyes, probably, because we don't see Libun Chamur, but there is a possibility of doing Libun Chamur. And the Shulchan Aruch paskins that Nafal Harbe Chalav Al Dofen Akira Hakdeira. Normally, when we say that a small amount of milk spills and the spill dribbles, so to speak, to the outside of the kdeira that's cooking meat, so we apply the principle of bittul. But here we're talking about a case of Nafal Harbe Chalav Al Dofen Akdeira. And the Shulchan Aruch says that if there's vast volumes of milk that are falling on the outside of the kedera, then ein lahat. We're not going to use shishim. And the Rambam adds, afilu yesh shishim v'tavshil keneged ha'cholav. So the Vilna Gaon writes the following. The kedera itself, asura, right? So, not only is the tavshil asur, but the kedair itself is asur. Mipnei shatora heida al kli cheres and yotzim deidaf yoliola. In other words, this kedaira, according to the Vilna Gaon, is made of what? Of cheres. It's a chinaware kli. Mashma, it sounds like the Gaon is understanding the alfina on mipnei shatora heida al kli cheres lo rak de lo mahanya agola be kli cheres. In other words, once a certain volume of Isur fell onto the Kli Cheres, in this case because there's a hot fire going on, then we're not going to apply the principle of Bittul. And when it says, it means more than just that you won't be able to get rid of the Blia, but it means that whatever minimum amount of blia already entered or penetrated into the walls of the Kli Cheres, there's no bittul. Klomar, afilu mashahu oser bidofen shal Kli Cheres. V'koshe. He says, I don't understand. Maishna hagola ubitul mi libun de shapir mahani b'Kli Cheres. So again, he's asking a pretty naive question. I almost intuitively know the answer to this question, but it's interesting how Rav Soloveitchik formulates the answer to this question. He's saying that we know, based on a sugyan zvachim, that if you have a tanur shel cheres, and it was used for cooking isur, let's say arla, whatever the case may be, then all you have to do is you have to heat up the inside of the tanur. Or, for example, you have to put hot coals inside the tanur. Or, in a case of a Kli Cheres, you can burn out the blia that's inside the Kli Cheres. And basically, this is called Hachzara L'Kivshonos, which is another way of saying Libun Chamur. Libun Chamur, you throw the entire thing into a hot furnace. And now the question is as follows. We just finished establishing that in Kli Cheres A, there's no such thing as Hagola. B, there's no such thing as bittul, because even a mashu generates an Isur in Kli Cheres. What makes Libun so unique that it has the power to be matir and machshir a Kli Cheres, where Hagola could never do such a thing, and bittul wouldn't even do such a thing? So I'll tell you the truth. Before I saw this paragraph, what I thought the answer was, But I guess I was naive about this. For some reason, the Rav doesn't feel it's such a simple question. I thought the answer was that what you can accomplish with limun is way beyond, or I don't know what word to use, superior to what you could accomplish with hagola. In hagola, you're trying to remove the tam, and it's already saturated inside the porous nature of the pottery or the earthenware, whatever it might be. But in the case of Liban, what you're doing is you're going into the holes, you know, into the crevices and the cracks in the klicheres, and you're burning out the blia. Is that what the Rav means in his answer? Maybe that's exactly what he means. He says, "V'nira liyashiv, the bitul v'agola matirin es hakli al yidei haflotas tam ha'isur." Right, what we're trying to do is getting rid of the tam, and we can't achieve that goal satisfactory in the case of a kli cheres, neither through hagola nor through the laws of bittul. Avalibun eino motzias hablia klal. Libun doesn't mean that we're removing the blia. Ela harehu sarfo bimakoma. I mean, that's what I thought intuitively would be the answer, but I know he's upgrading it to some sort of halacha. You know, it's not a mitzius the way I understood it. You know, just burn out the tam. V'havi gzeres hakosuf the ein hechsher l'kli cheres. Now, when the Torah says in the parsha of Kodshim in Tzav, it says that there's no such thing as hechsher kelim in a kli cheres, and yotzim deidofyo li olam. That's only when you're applying the methodology to be matir the kli through haflatas tam ha'isur, and the Torah says that this tam bolua can never be removed. Again, you can remove partially, but can never be totally removed through the process of hagola. And therefore, he says, lo mahani be hechsher al yidei haflatas tam ha'isur. Masha enke bolibun. The hoel v'umachshes hakli al yidei sreifas habliya is memela shapir mahani af be klicheres. I'm tempted to think, again, Rabosa, I don't know if you will buy into this, even depending on how you read this paragraph, that what the Rav indicates here is that there's some sort of difference between a process of being matir the Iser itself. That means there's tam bolua, and the Torah appoints hagola normally, not in the case of kli cheres, normally as the method to be matir that tam bolua. And it could be that in general, when the Torah says that you're allowed to be matir the tam balua through hagola, the Torah knows and admits that there still is some tam balua left even after the hagola, but nevertheless it's mutter. The Torah recognizes that since the amount of blia that's left after the hagola is limited, it's minimal, therefore the Torah says we'll be matir. Masha enkein out. Mashenkin, in the case of a kli cheres, with regard to a kli cheres, the Torah says that, you know what, you're not making a significant impact on the blia when you subject the kli to hagola, and therefore there's no matir. The blia is still very much alive and well. Mashenkin, in the case of libun, we're not saying that the Torah was matir something through the process of libun, because again, if the Torah is being matir, it would imply that there's still some blia left. And that should be enough to be asur, just as we saw it in the case of a kli cheres with regard to hagola. That hagola, with all due respect, still leaves a bit of a blia here. And he's saying the following, that as long as you're dealing with hilchos blia, the Torah has to be matir. The Torah has to say, well, you know, there's very little blia left after hagola, there's no significant blia, and therefore that's mutter. In the case of kli cheres, there's still a significant blia, and therefore the hagola will not be meaningful to accomplish that heter. It will not have a serious impact on the blia, serious enough, radical enough, to change this blia into such an insignificant blia that the Torah will be matir that blia. In the case of kli cheres, there's a very significant amount of blia that even remains after the hagola, and therefore the matir of being maflid through hagola is not applicable to the case of kli cheres. But Levin, on the other hand, tells me that there's no bli at all. So I was just thinking out loud, what would be, according to Rav Soloveitchik, if you had a kli cheres that was used for chatamas, and now you throw the kli cheres back into the kivshonos? The Torah says that you have to destroy the kli. So that's a gzeres hakosav, you have to destroy the kli. Let's talk about a kli cheres that was used for shlomim. The Torah doesn't say you have to destroy the kli. Would it be possible that without all the chidushim that we had in the previous piece about reducing the bliya to a level of what? Of a tam kolush, and then it no longer has a shame kli shlomim, and you clinch it with what we call shtifa bitzonen. Why not just subject the kli to libum? And if you burn out the bliya of what? Of the shlomim, then this kli is no longer a kli. It's no longer a kli kachim. Why? Because there's no bliya at all left over. You know, you can talk about hagola, and then I remove most of the bliya, but it's not completely removed. It's only a tam kolush, and then you can tell me that I need another process in order to remove the shame kli, and that's called shtifa mitzonein. But I would think that you could obviate the entire need for this process through Liban, because what Liban is going to tell you is that since you burnt out the bliya of the shlomim inside the kli, the walls of the kli, it's no longer a kli cheres shenis bashal bo kachim or shlomim, because that's history, that no longer exists.
Liban is the way that a kli cheres is created in the first place.
So perhaps you could go a step further and say that if you recreate the kli through libun a second time around, then it no longer has a shame kli shlomim.
You reduced it to its elements.
Excellent. Do you have page resh lamed? Okay. The Ramah writes in Archaim that ein hagolam o elis klumim ein hamayim roschim. That Hagola requires boiling water. That if we look for the Ababu Oz.
That's what Hagola means, isn't it?
That's what Hagola means. So the Rav wants to reinterpret this Ramah in a very unique way. And he says the following. That we have a principle called Kibolo Kach Polto. What level of heat do we require for Hagola in order to apply the principle of Kibolo Kach Polto? Is there some objective standard, you know, a cutoff point, and below that heat level, it's meaningless? Or is it relevant? Is it relative to the heat that was used in the original bliya?
Right.
So you'll see it has two nafkaminas, one lechumra and one lekula. Ha'im ratza lomar, this is the first interpretation of the Ramah. Dehecha shenivla b'chom shel resicha. To the same extent that the original Blias Isur was with a certain heat of Resicha, is Eina Blia Yotzis El Bechom Kozeh. You have to match it up with the same element of heat. Mishum de Kibolo Kach Polto. And the Rav is going to talk about something which in, you know, many, many years ago was a little bit of an innovation. And that's called a pressure cooker. Today, I don't know, I'm not sure how popular a pressure cooker is, but apparently a pressure cooker could heat up something way, way beyond the normal levels of heat. And the question is, if the original bliya was in that intense heat, what kind of level would be sufficient for the Hagola to apply the principle of Kibolo Kach Polto? And the Rav, in his first interpretation of the Ramah, is saying that it's all relative, meaning Kibolo Kach Polto has to be taken absolutely literally, and in order to achieve your goal of Plato, you have to reach up to the standards of the original Bliya. Now that's a Kula and a Chumra, because again, it's a Chumra in the case of something that had a Bliya through a very, very intense level of heat, but it might be a Kula in a case where the heat was on a low flame. O Dilma, or should we say that's not what the Ramah has in mind? When the Ramah says our Gola requires Roschim, he means that Afim Nivla Isa Bechom Shal Yad Soledes Bo. Let's say Yad Soledes Bo is 111 degrees. He says that's not enough. B'din HaGola Tzarch LaHagil B'mayim Roschim, where the bubbles are coming up, it's got to be 160 degrees temperature. So the original B'liya was 110, which is called Yad Soledes. So I'm just making up numbers here. Shimon Eider, I don't know if you remember him, Oliver Shalom, he has in his Hilchos Shabbos a whole discussion about, you know, what is considered Yad Soledes Bo and what's not Yad Soledes Bo. He has different, degrees and so forth and so on. But let's say it's 110, I'm just throwing out a number. And then you have something which, I'm sorry, and then I wanted to be Magil the Kli in Yad Soledes Bo. Now Yad Soledes Bo, if you've seen it, it doesn't have bubbles coming up. You know what I mean? It's Yad Soledes Bo. I don't want you to put your finger in there, and certainly don't take it and put it on the belly of a child. But yet it's not it's not the Mayim Roschim that we're talking about. It's Mayim Yad Soledes Bo, but it's not Mayim Roschim. O Dilma, he says in the second pass, that even though the original B'liya was only Yad Soledes Bo, as hot as that sounds, that's really cool, relative to Hagola, which requires Roschim. Roschim means it's so hot that the bubbles are coming up. So again, the first shot is relativity, that we take Kibbolah Kakpolto literally, and the second shot is objectivity, which means that there's a standard of Hagol, and you can't go below the standard of Hagol. The Rav is going to say, not only could you not go below the standard level of Hagol, that cutoff point, but you don't have to go beyond the level of Hagol. He says, Litzad Echad, if you hold the relativity theory of Kibbolah Kakpolto, Shakol Tolui, Bekach, Bahaklol, everything, all the standards and laws and requirements of Hagola depend upon Kibbolah Kakpolto, is Yetze Kula Vichumra. Why? The Imnivla Al Yidei Chom Shal Yad Soledes Bo Yesagi B'Yad Soledes Bo LaHagola. By the way, if you would publicize this, you'd be in deep, deep trouble. You know, if I would go to the army, let's say when I do my miluim, I don't do my miluim anymore. They finally let me go after 13 years. But if you would go into the army and say, you know what, you know, it's the water has settled down, but the vapors are still coming up. Believe me, it's Yad Soledes Bo, and let's do the Agola. Then all the other rabbanim would yell at you. What are you talking about? We have to wait till it bubbles. So they put the big, the cover on the lid on top, and they wait. And that's why it took us 12 hours to do the Agola, because we're waiting for those stupid bubbles to come up. You know what I'm saying? But the Rav is saying Kibbolah Kakpolto in his first pshat, which means that if the original B'liya was B'yad Soledes Bo, then the Agola could likewise be B'yad Soledes Bo. So that's a great kula. Will be idach. On the flip side of it, he has the chumra. Nivla yidei chom shu yoser miresicha. Imagine that you have a heat level that is achieved by the, and that you can measure by the moment that the bubbles go up. But there's a heat level even beyond that. He says in that case you would need for agola a higher level than afkamina le'inyan agolas. Pressure cooker. I felt like I was reading a Truman Rav Moshe Feinstein. If you ever read his Igros Moshe, you know, when he gets to the reality of the question, you have no idea what he's talking about. I remember I read the word machines 50 million times. I couldn't figure out what he meant.
It's a car.
Yeah, farmers. You ever see where he writes farmers? You know, Fay Olive Frazier. So he says the pressure cooker, Sharei Achom Shebetocha pressure cooker, Lamala Michom Shal Resichas Mayim. V'nira, She'ef shal agilo b'shnei shlavim. You know, the Rav wants to know, how are you going to do this in the case of a pressure cooker? So he wants to do it piecemeal. She'betchila, first, yechamu bo mayim b'derech she'mevashlim bo. Right, so use it as you normally would use it. V'zei yichoshev lehag'ol l'tzad apnim. So it's interesting, you can do hechsher kelim in two stages. One stage for the inside of the kli, and the other for the outside of the kli. Now, the nafkamina is going to be the following. The inside of the kli needs a hagola of the highest level of heat that even goes beyond roseach. But as far as the outside of the kli is concerned, is that's only nitzotzos hanitazim olav mibachutz, right? So let's say it overflows, And he says in that case, now it's enough that you machshir it in the level of a yora rosachas. Let's go on in Siman Sadi Beis. And the Mechaber writes the following. Yesh mi shematir b'shas adchak, going to be Erev Shabbos, afilu im nofla tipas cholov, shalo keneged arotev. Now it works like this. You know, this is a very paradoxical, or shall I say, not paradoxical, but it's counterintuitive halach. Let's see if I can quiz you on this to get what I think is the more intuitive answer to my question, which is the wrong answer, but I want to evoke the wrong answer so that you'll appreciate how this is so counterintuitive. If, let's say, milk spills onto the outside of a kedera that has meat inside of it, correct? What would you say is worse? If the milk reaches the bottom half of the kli, you know, the kedera where the meat is, or the top half of the kedera? Which sounds more destructive, so to speak? The bottom, right? That's what I would have said intuitively. The halacha works with the opposite. Yeah. Why? Because if it's keneged a rotev, then we can apply the principle of shishim, and we're going to take a look at the tavshil itself, and we're going to look at the tipas cholov, and we're going to come to the conclusion that the tipas cholov is less than 1 to 60 against the tavshil. But if it falls shelo keneged a rotev on the top part of the kli, then we have a serious a challenge, because then we assume, again, these are all sorts of principles, Cham Miktosa, Cham Kulo, which the Tipas Chol somehow spreads throughout the entire Kedera. It doesn't enter into the Tavshil, so the Tavshil doesn't have the power to be Mavatalit. And we always assume that the relationship between the Tavshil and the walls of the Kli, if they have maximum Bliya, is less than 1 to Shishim. It means it's no same time. However, B'Shas Adchak, he says, Kegon B'Erev Shabbos, he says that even though shelo keneged arotev, which is a very serious issue, and it's even shelo keneged aish, which means the following, that if the fire is going up and the tipas cholov falls on the outside of the kedera, we always assume that the fire sort of consumes that tipa immediately. So you don't have mimanafshach, you have nothing to rely on here. Number one, it's not keneged atavshil. Number two, it's not keneged aish. And yet the Mechaber says that b'shas adchak we can rely on shishim. So the Gaon says that this is a reflection of the Ravan. The Ravan shita has not been accepted, but b'shas adchak will fall back on the Ravan. The Mordechai quotes the Ravan. And this has to do with the principle of chaticha nasis nevela. We spent a lot of time on chaticha nasis nevela. The Ravan asks the following question. He says, I don't understand. The milk gives tam into the rotev that was nivla b'kedera. In other words, let's say you cook meat in a pot, and together with the meat there's rotev, there's the liquid substance. That liquid substance is now absorbed into the walls of the kli. Now, if cholov goes into the walls of the kli, and it connects with the rotev, then how are you going to apply the principle of bitul b'shishim? Let's say even in the case of keneged atavshil. For chihadar polet oso rotev, what happens is when the rotev now is polet, together with everything else that's mixed up in this kedera, then the rotev is min b'mino with the rest of the contents of the pot. And he's assuming that we pass in like Rabbi Yehuda that min b'mino afilu b'elef lo bata. So what it means is that we no longer see the cholov as a separate entity which could be batel in the rotev, because the shishim in the rotev against the cholov, but rather once the tipas cholov penetrates into the rotev itself becomes a chaticha di sura. And once it becomes a chaticha disura, its mixture with the rest of the rotev in the kedera is min b'mina. So how can you ever imagine that when the tipas cholov falls on the outside of the kedera, and now it in the walls of the kedera we have a bli of both what? Chalav and Rotev, how could you ever imagine that that tam, when it goes back into the Kedera, would be Batal B'Shishim? It can never be Batal B'Shishim because the Rotev becomes a Cheftzadi Surah, that's called Chanan, and therefore it's Min B'Mino, and Min B'Mino is never Batal. So the Ravan comes up with a whole new theory. And he says that chaticha nas tevela only applies when the milk falls onto the meat, right, into the pot. But when it falls on the outside of the pot, that's already called blia b'kelim. So now you want to take the rotev that's balua in the walls of the kli, and you want to upgrade it, convert it into a chefza di sura through the principle of chanan. You can't do that with basar, that's bolua. You can only do that with basar mamashas, a be'en. So if I have a mixture of milk and meat, then forget about the milk. Once the milk penetrates into the meat and it gives a tam of cholov into the meat itself becomes a cheftza nevel, it's basar b'cholov. However, if the milk penetrates into the walls of the kli, and the walls of the kli have a blia of tam basar, that tam basar can never become nevela, because ein chanan be balua bekelim. And he has a raya, and based on his raya, the Shulchan Aruch says, although we don't accept the Ravan, but we need to rely on, when we need desperately to rely on the Ravan, that's exactly what we're going to do. So in the 5 minutes that we have left, I want to just fast forward to the paragraph that says, Umidivrei HaRavan. Do we have that? It's on page Reish Lamed Aleph?
No.
Yes, maybe? No?
Yeah.
Again, I'm skipping an entire paragraph before that where the Ravan proves his shita from a sugya in Chulim. That's a very interesting Ravan. Oh. So Rav Soloveitchik wants to know, what's the conceptual justification here for the Ravan? Again, the Ravan has rayas, but how do you understand this conceptually? Why shouldn't the tam balua bekelim of basa in this case become a chefza nevela once the cholov enters into the walls of the kli? He says, "Bipshuto ha'yanir lefarish ta'hainu tam de'lo amrin chanan bibalua mishum de'lo shayach lomar shabalua bekeli chashiv kimachzik es ha'isur." Okay, let's try to spend a minute or two to understand what the Rav means by machzik es ha'isur. Lefi ani yisdait. What happens is, in the classic case of chanan, which is tipas cholv shenofal al abasar, and then he cooks that basar together with another kedera of basar, then you need shishim against the entire piece of meat. It's not enough to have shishim against the tipas cholv. That's called chanan. Says the Rav, the reason for that is that piece of meat, right, the original meat that was the victim of the nefilas cholov, that is a machzik es ha'isur. What does that mean? It's machzik es ha'isur. You know, these are like human terminologies that we're attributing to an inanimate object. You know, the basar doesn't have a mind to think. But it's machzik es ha'isur means what happens is that this basar grabs onto the cholov, and not only that, but it transmits that tam over to the rest of the kedera. So it's playing a double role, so to speak. It's an active role of machzik es ha'isur. It grabs on to the tipas cholov, and it takes that tipa and transmits it further, and becomes like an intermediary. I'm gonna infiltrate into the rest of the kedera with a tam of basar b'cholov. Says Rav Soloveitchik, that doesn't apply to the case of blia b'kelim. Why? Because the blia b'kelim is totally passive, right? It's not actively involved in picking up a tam and transmitting a tam. The blia is there because the walls of the kli are bolea, but you cannot take the blia of a tam in the walls of the kli and call it a machzik es ha'isur, as if to say that now this is a piece of meat that has now received the tam of cholov in it, and now that piece of meat is being cooked together with the other piece of meat in the kedera, and it's transmitting that tam from the cholov into the basar. So that you can only say about a piece of meat, but you can't say it about a tam bolua. Now for the rest of this piece, which is a fascinating piece, he rejects this, and he says that that's not the pshat in the Ravan, and he tries to prove that, and he comes up with a more revolutionary interpretation of the Rambam. All right, we'll stop here.
I don't remember
that there is such a distinction. You can have a thing, a thin, you can have a fat.
They're both in Balua from different sides of the pot, but they have to be able to meet somewhere. So, question: how far does the Balua penetrate?
I don't remember that in Shulchan Aruch they make that
pot.
You remember such a thing?
So then the
Oh, go down. Oh, very good.
So that's about the balloon would be more like
right. Very good, Lenny. We had a discussion about the case of tzli, and the issue was that the dam cannot go upwards; it could only go down. So if you have tzli and the dam is going this way, that's one thing. But let's say you have an iso on top, then we say ein ha iso yochel agil l'shar. So we'll see if we can apply
that down.
Yeah, that was the case of Dom. All right, let's take a break for Mincha. All right, we accomplished a lot.